One of the biggest battles wool has been facing for some years now has been fast fashion. Inexpensive, generally synthetic clothing produced rapidly by very large mass market retailers in response to the latest trends. The epicenter of this has been Europe, where Woolmark has been putting wool's natural credentials of renewability and biodegradability to those making future laws governing consumer branding. So where is this David versus Goliath battle at? Let's find out. Welcome to The Yarn. It's a podcast for the wool industry. I'm Marius Cumming. Damien Pomerant is the Woolmark manager for Western Europe, which includes the London and Paris offices. He explains what the staff in these two significant offices do on behalf of Australian wool growers.
So we have textile engineers. We have marketing directors working with brands. We have project managers also, people working in education with schools to make sure that all the students get all the knowledge they need to develop the wool offer in their future position and role in the brands. So it's a great team with really different profiles. We work on really different activations. So I just mentioned education, that's with fashion schools, but not only, we also work with business schools, engineers also. We work also with lots of conference, a lot of the industry, educating the industry. So we also work, for example, we have a masterclass with LVMH where we go and we do half a day or a day with people working their studios, so it could be people working in Louis Vuitton, in Dior. They've been working a long time for those companies. They're super creative, but it's good to go through all the wool benefits, all the innovations, make sure that they're aware and that they can implement and add more wool in their collections. So that's the type of education we do with students, with professionals also. So that's one thing. Mm. We do, of course, collaborations with all different type of brands, from fashion to sports. And we, after, of course, have some more, we say, lobbying actions, working with the EU and with the French government, for example, for making sure that the future laws will prevent for, because there is I don't know if you heard about it, the footprint labeling that will be on everywhere on textile. That's a good thing. We just want to make sure that it reflects really, the real impact, and that natural fiber, and especially wool, will be well rated.
Yes, well, that was my first question, really, about product environmental footprint, which we have been fighting for wool's correct place there for some time. It seems like wool's been misrepresented in the EU labelling laws through the product environmental footprint, but it's been going for a long time, and I understand that EU elections are coming up. So how do we make sure that we make a difference here and we don't drop the opportunity?
So it's as you said, it's a long run, and it's an agenda that is also moving. It's often postponing. We don't know at the moment if it will be initially mandatory or just an option for the brands to do it. So there's many different field where we need to fight. There's some technical groups also where we are part of, and we work with brands also to do some trials with some specific items. For example, a sweater, a wool sweater, compared to a polyester sweater, and we have many friend activation, and one of them that is maybe the most important is we reach directly to the politics and also to the European citizen to explain what's happening and what's going on, and we're making progress. I think the initial plan was really bad for wool rating, and it was really unfair. We are really making progress. I think now the media also did their part of the job, because we kind of worked a lot with them to explain that this overall program is a good thing to help the customer to do the right choice and to change their consumer behavior, but also at the same time that if we go in the wrong direction, I think the biggest issue would be that it will go live and that the customer won't trust it. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity for all the industry to evolve, but it needs to be done the right way. And so every month there is something new coming up in terms of the agenda, in terms of the votes. But I would say that we did a lot of progress to compare to 3 years ago. And we still, I believe, still 2 years to work on before this program will go live.
Yes, well, I didn't sort of explain it very well, but the product environmental footprint was a European Union plan or law to have every garment that was sold in Europe with a swing tag explaining the environmental footprint of that garment, and therefore sort of informing the consumer. But wool and natural fibres were put in a bad light, with sort of a red light relative to a green light. But the green light for synthetics, but which is just mad.
Yes.
But the reality is, Damien, of course, that Europe is home to some very big, very influential, very powerful fast fashion brands that employ tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. So you're up against the reality of fast fashion.
Yes, and it's really interesting what's happening right now, because all the question is about durability, and it's all we're all working around that term and what durability is, and I wanted to, maybe I can explain. There's something interesting is like in electronics, for example, your washing machine, for example, if you when at the end of the product life. Usually, always comes because it's the machine is used. It's not working anymore, so you're gonna buy a new one. But in textile, it's really different. Only a third of the garment we throw away are because they're used. So the rest, the two or the third, is the garment is brand new. So the durability that was initially into this project was about like pure physical durability. So that works in electronics, for example.
Mm.
But it's not working for fashion, because if you throw away a garment that is brand new, it's not because it's used, and it's not because the physical durability is not right.
The motor's not burnt out.
So yeah, so we need to look at more holistic, and we call emotional durability. And where it's really interesting there is that natural fiber, and especially wool, is like in all the statistics, more likely to be kept much more, used much more, many times, and after at the end of the product life, being resold or being given to your daughters, for example, or to be recycled.
It's handed on, yes.
So that's really that, and that's what also with all those statistics that we're coming to the EU explaining. That we cannot really look simply on the physical durability, where polyester always has better results.
Yes, but does the EU Commission also, does the EU Parliament also recognise that there are no wool fibres in the ocean, there are no wool fibres in rivers, it is fully biodegradable, or is that something that's overlooked?
So no, that's microplastic, and that's completely insane, wasn't part of that plan initially, completely absent. 35% of the microplastic in the ocean comes from the textile industry.
35%.
Right. So it's massive impact. So now some European countries started to put by law also that on the swing tag, if it's more than 30% polyester inside, there is a special icon warning the customer that this product will have a bad impact on the ocean. So it's already a first step. And now the EU, with all what's happening in the new statistics, cannot just put apart this major part of the product impact. So this is something that is getting in. We don't know exactly how, but it has to go. And you mentioned fast fashion earlier, and I think that's really important. What's happening in Europe right now, as you said, fast fashion is mostly coming from Europe, especially from Spain.
Mm.
And it's those super successful companies keep having they keep having the best results, even when the economy is going slow downs. Politically, there's a major change that happened 6 months ago. Is now both on the national and on the EU levels, politics wants to tackle fast fashion.
Yeah, but they are, I mean, we can name them, Zara and H&M, these big companies that have very good balance sheets, that sell a lot of products, that have a very fast supply chain, they're powerful. And little old Woolmark, we do not have the deep pockets that this is a David versus Goliath battle.
Yeah, but we're small, but we're super well connected. So, for example, a couple of months ago, I met with the French minister in charge of all those subjects and the ecological transition. And we had a full meeting in Paris. He's trying to brainstorm about how we can, if we want to tackle fast fashion, or we can put rules to limit the number of SKUs in the collection, for example, to limit also the discount that those companies are doing, because those products are created to be already discounted from the beginning. So the price point, the retail price is already, when they create this new SKU, already planned to be be sold discounted. And this is pushing customer to overconsume all the time. So there is a list of 10 different points that we can put into the law to limit the number of collection per year, the number of SKU, the discount rate that can be limited also, to also push fast fashion to evolve and to do better products, because they can keep having those, and we want them to be successful. We just want them to reduce the impact and to sell better products, maybe more expensive, but that will last longer, that will be better for the customer.
Would they ever think of using wool?
They do, for the moment, such a tiny percentage of their collection. When you think about fast fashion, it's also really interesting. It's all, this business model is based on polyester, basically. When you think about it, they have those beautiful stores in the middle of London, in the middle of Paris, extremely high rents, that with a customer experience that seems to be luxurious, and at the end to pay those rents by selling, I don't know, 20 pound sweaters, you need to sell massive amounts, and that cannot be done with a big margin, and that cannot be done without polyester. So and that's something that is real, and also a good image I like to use is the fact that before in fashion there were two collections a year, between two collections and four collections a year, and so a truck was coming at the beginning of the winter season, filling the store, and during the season the customer were purchasing, and at the end of the store go on sale. They empty the store and there's a new truck coming for the next 6 months. If you go, for example, in Paris, there's a beautiful store in the middle of Paris near Opera. There is every morning at 4 a.m. there is a huge truck coming in front of the Zara store, filling the seven floors of that store. And every morning, every day of the year, there is a truck coming and filling with polyester crap this store.
Amazing. Isn't that amazing that it's so fast, that it's so in contrast with the whole message of sustainability, and it's hopefully a good opportunity for wool. And tell us a little bit more, Damien, about the market in Western Europe and the trends that you see happening and the opportunities for wool.
So on the other side of fast fashion in Europe, we are it's a really upper market, so we have all the biggest luxury groups with a lot of brands, and they're also doing very well, expanding. What is interesting is that even if they're based in Europe, the 80% of their turnover is done internationally. So that's why it's really important for Woolmark and for AWI to have some staff over there working with those big companies, because it's not only impacting the offer and the wool volumes in Europe, but also everywhere else. They're also important brands to work with because they're showing the way, they're super visible, and they're showing the way to all the rest of the textile industry. So when maybe Dior is choosing to put 30% of wool in their collection, all the industry is looking at that. And that's why it's really important to keep working with them, using wool the right way, and also being innovative way, for example, maybe in their sportswear collection, because they're also going more and more streetwear or sportswear, those big brands, to show that wool has a fantastic opportunity also in those type of products.
So finally, what would you like to say to wool growers about what's happening in Western Europe?
I think even if those two areas, Europe and Australia, are really far away in distance, I think the overall story, and also the future and all the innovation and all the issue we're facing, wool is the perfect product. And I know it's and we are in the process of doing better products. We know it's harder. It makes time. It needs to be more transparent, of course. It needs to be done in a better way. But that's the product of the future. And that's without natural fiber, there's no way we can do a better textile industry. And so I think it's a fantastic opportunity for wool, even if right now we are facing a lot of challenges. But it's the best fabric and the best fiber to in terms of comfort, performance, and also responding to all the sustainability standard for the future. There's a space for a big opportunity for wool in the future.
Fantastic. Well, let's hope so. We look forward to hearing more of your good work. Thank you for what you do for the industry, and thank you for having a yarn with us today. Thanks, Damien.
Thank you very much, Marius. Thank you.
Damien Pomeret, the Woolmark Manager for Western Europe, with some uplifting and optimistic views for the future for wool across that vital market for our fibre. To keep a closer eye on Woolmark's work across the world, you can follow Woolmark on Facebook and Instagram. But of course, you can follow Australian Wool Innovation on all social media channels to get a great sense of what the company is doing for wool growers across Australia. But for now, from me, Marius Cumming, thanks for your company.